the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900 star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Let's open the hour with Smitty. You're on Sports Talk. Hello.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. And yourself?
I'm fine, thanks. I got two questions about women's basketball. First off, that was a great interview y'all did with that award winner. I thought that was just super. My question is, first question is, when did girls basketball in high school go to full court?
I don't know for sure, but based on what Jill Pruden said, it might have been 1970. That was her first.
Well, that'd be about right, because I graduated in 1970 from Maryville High School, and it was still half court that previous season. So it could have been then.
And the reason I'm guessing is because she said she was making the transition at Oak Ridge to full court, to 5-on-5, and her first year was 1970.
Okay. So was women's college basketball always full court?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know that.
Okay.
But you're going back to AIAW years? here's the reason I'm questioning that is, so if you look in the Tennessee media guide, and a lot of people think the first team they had was under Pat Summitt. No, they had a team in the 1920s.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I don't know what they did in the 1920s.
So
yeah,
definitely has been since it was an NCAA sanctioned sport.
Correct.
Okay. Well, and here's one more good one for you. I was at UT Martin the same time Pat Summitt was.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Pat Head in those days.
Right.
I saw her maybe twice in 4 years. So, you know, it's just, I was in accounting, she wasn't. So, and I never saw a women's game the whole time I was there.
So you saw her in class or in the hallway?
Well, I would have seen her. Yeah, I never saw her play basketball.
Okay.
And I worked with the men's basketball team for all 4 years.
Wow.
So,
did
yeah.
you know she
and
was?
I met her years later and told her we were at Martin together, and she said, I don't remember you. And I said, that's quite all right.
By the way, the Lady Vols first team was 1902-03.
Okay.
So anyway.
Okay. One more quick thing. I came back from Germany after my first tour in Europe in 78. And when I called my dad to let him know I got home, back in the States, okay. I said, what are you doing? He said, watching a women's basketball game on TV. And this was in 78. One, I didn't know they were even on TV. And second, I said, well, who's playing? And he said, Tennessee playing UConn. And my comment was, there's a women's basketball team in the UConn? Anyway, guys, thanks a lot.
UConn's first team was like 74, 75. That was the first team, so I didn't realize that they went back that far for their first game.
Yeah. Okay, guys, thanks a lot.
All right, sure to appreciate it. And if you go to History of Women's Basketball, which is a feature on WNBA.com, they say it became full court at the highest level in 1971.
Okay.
Let's go to Randy. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Randy.
Hello, John and Jimmy. How you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing fine. Hey, a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about this IntelliGym that NBA teams had been using for quite a few years. It's more of a simulator, a hands-on type thing where you got to make instantaneous decisions that they throw at you, this IntelliGym.
Mm-hmm.
And it was adapted for basketball from fighter pilot technology. But there's something out now called AIQ test that's supposed to be replacing the Wonderlic test pretty soon. It stands for Athletic Intelligent Quotient test. And it's not like IntelliGym where that's hands-on. You got to make quick instantaneous decisions, you know, court awareness, pattern recognition, spatial awareness, and so forth. This is more type of questions when John Gruden, you know, grills quarterbacks on his show. What do you do in this situation? What do you do in that situation?
Mm-hmm.
But it's I've been reading about it, and it may well, some teams are going to be still using the Wonderlic, but some teams I think are going to go strictly to the AIQ, and that'll probably be in this year's combine as well, NFL. But it's interesting. It's supposed to go not just for football and basketball. It's a multi-sport type test that's good for soccer, ice hockey, and so forth. So that's going to be interesting. Things change every day real fast. That's the world we live in, modern technology. But, another thing I want to throw out, you know, Vescovi, Santiago Vescovi, his game, if he can get his fundamentals down a little bit more and quit making so many turnovers, I see his game as a cross between John Stockton and Bob Cousy. He's got a flair for the dramatic like Cousy, and he's got the potential to be very fundamentally sound like Stockton. And that's just my take on that. What do you guys think about that?
That's a pretty high standard. Those are two of the greatest point guards ever. I think he has the potential to be a pretty good player. I still think he's adjusting to the game. He's young. He is left-hand dominant, still working to get the right hand more involved, as Arkansas showed last night with the way they defended him. And I guess it's to be expected that he's going to have some ups and downs this year, because last night he didn't play very well. But I do think he's got some cleverness about him. I think he is a pretty good passer. He does get himself caught in too many binds where he commits too many turnovers. He'll have to learn from that and be a little bit smarter about when and where to penetrate and not getting double-teamed and so forth. But I do think he can be a nice player at Tennessee.
Okay, fellas, thanks a lot for taking my call. I appreciate it.
All right, sure do appreciate it. And the looks like the NFL has been using that AIQ test in addition to the Wonderlic in some instances since 2012.
Oh, been around a while.
Has been.
By the way, the first time Tennessee played Connecticut in basketball was 1995. I'm wondering if perhaps the discussion from playing in the 70s was against Chattanooga, because they played Chattanooga a lot then, but not Connecticut. Connecticut did not come onto the schedule until 1995.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900 puts you on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The voices in our head may not be real, but they're loud and have some good ideas. This is 99.1, the Sports Animal.
.656-9900 is how you join us. *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. That's how you join Sports Talk.
The executive director of the NFLPA, Demaryius Smith, is confident the players will approve the collective bargaining agreement. He said he understands why some of the players are upset, but he also pointed out, and I was a little bit surprised by this, 60% of NFL players make the minimum, and now they're looking to add about 100,000 increase to the minimum salary of an NFL player. I didn't think it would be quite that many. They've also adjusted it this way. If you make at least $4.25 million and you play the 17th game, you're going to get a regular game check. If you make less than that, your game check is going to be $250,000. If you've got 60% making the minimum for an NFL salary, you got to think a lot of those are going to vote to approve this, and there will be others that approve it. A lot of your player reps are players that are making a whole lot of money. So we talked about this, John, yesterday. That's one reason I think they're going to approve it. I think it'll be a close vote. He also said that one of the reasons that there was talk about having an opt-out clause in this 10-year deal. And Smith said that they ultimately are against it, the players, and he is against it. He said because you don't want to have a situation where maybe the TV monies go down, or maybe there's a hit on the financial market, there's a decline there, you're protected. But if there's an opt-out clause, the owners could say, hey, we didn't get as much on TV as we thought. The financial markets hurt us. We're going to opt out. They didn't want that. They wanted the assurance that they were going to have that. So they were going to be insulated against any concerns about the TV contract or the financial market. So that's another reason that that he said that the players wanted to not have an opt-out. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. As we talked about, the vote was 17-4 with the player reps saying they were in favor with one abstained. So, we'll, I'm sorry, 17-14 to send it to the players with one abstaining. I don't necessarily know if that means they favored it, but they decided to let the players vote in total. And so the all they need is a majority of the players. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in these discussions and when they might go along with this. So I thought that was some interesting insight from the Smith, who's head of the NFLPA, and his thoughts about where this thing might be going.
Yeah, and I do agree. I think considering that it is a majority that makes the minimum, the league minimum, that would tell you right there that they would be moved to ratify it and to approve it just based on what would be the immediate gain for them, because so many of those will, in all likelihood, the majority of those would be guys that probably play 5 years or less in the NFL.
Right. And so if you were to put an extra $100,000 in their pocket for 4 years or 3 years, that's a lot of money to them.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of money to Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, et cetera, but it's a lot of money to those that are not making a ton of money. It's a lot. Is a minimum like $400,000 to $500,000 right now, somewhere in that range?
Yeah, I think it's a little more than, it might be around $450,000.
Okay. So you add another $100,000 to that. That's a high percentage of their contract. That's a high percentage of their annual income. And so it does make a big difference to those players that are at that level. It's not a hill of beans to the most of the quarterbacks that are making over $20 million and some that are making over 30, but it is significant to those that are at the minimum level from what the NFL pays. So we'll see what happens. And Adam Schefter continues to say he think it could come as soon as this Friday, tomorrow, when they have the vote to make that determination. So, and I would be shocked at any kind of work stoppage. There's too much money that's being made by too many people, owners and players, to have any kind of work stoppage.
Yeah, that would be beyond foolish. Yeah. They have the best setup in terms of money making when it comes to, and revenue sharing when it comes to any other sport. And I don't think there's any question that they need to keep the wheels moving. It's 480 is actually 480. Right now. That's what it was this past season.
Yeah, so you go from 480 to 580. That's a pretty good jump.
Yeah.
If you're making $25 million, it's not, but that's not who this is targeted for. So I thought there was something interesting from Russell Wilson, and you might have a better take on this. He was saying that the NFL union needs to be like Major League Baseball and the NBA, where those unions seem to control their sport more.
Mm-hmm.
Your thought on that?
Well, very much so. The strongest union is baseball, mm-hmm. And that's also, I mean, the NFL is the only league where the salaries aren't guaranteed. And that's just based on when the league jumped into the path that led it past Major League Baseball as the most popular sport among the professional sports in the United States. They already had things in place that would keep it from being the same deal. So it has been, I mean, they just never, ever have had the guaranteed salaries that the other sports do.
Now, some have guaranteed, but not
correct.
All.
Correct, yeah.
So,
that's right. And not all monies are guaranteed in the NFL. Some do. Kirk Cousins got a guaranteed deal where every dollar was guaranteed, which is a rarity.
Yeah, and then in some situation, you might sign a $140 million deal and $120 is guaranteed.
Correct.
But in baseball, like, gosh, are all of them guaranteed in baseball?
They are.
Yeah. In the NBA, is it the same?
Correct.
So that's
NHL.
And the NHL. Well, see, I was going to say one reason football probably isn't is because you have a greater injury rate tied to football. But in the NHL, I would think you got a pretty significant injury rate there too. Maybe not as much as football. But I think that's why football is shied away from the guarantee, because if you have a significant injury, if you, well, years ago, if you tore your ACL, that was it. Now yes. You can come back from that in 8 months, we have seen from guys like Adrian Peterson. But I think that's the reason the NFL had shied away and has fought so long to not give all these guaranteed contracts to players, because they could get hurt and then that investment goes down the drain. So, of course, from the player standpoint, the risk of being injured is, hey, I need some protection here. So I could see where they would have an argument about that as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's one of those things that's toothpaste you can't get back in the tube. But it is, I think, the shortest shelf life would be the NFL. Mm-hmm. The NHL probably not far behind, but I think that'd probably be the greatest turnover that you see.
Yeah, I think so. And then, of course, with both baseball and the NBA, you're not dealing with as many players.
Correct.
So if you got 12 on a roster in the NBA, you're a little bit more inclined, I guess, to have a guarantee, because you're not dealing with the numbers that they deal with in the NFL.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Do want to remind you that we're with you until 6:30. That's when we step aside for coverage with the Lady Vol Network. As tonight, Tennessee takes on Ole Miss. It is senior night. Hard to believe that we're already to the last home game for Lady Vols.
Well, it is. Cameron Harris and Lou Brown will be honored. Lou Brown is the grad transfer from Washington State. She tore her ACL soon after putting on a Lady Vol uniform, missed all of last season, got a 6-year of eligibility, and has been a starter most of this season. Harris has played some. I think she had hoped to have a more productive career, but she is completing her eligibility at Tennessee, and so they will be honored. Typically, that's a pretty emotional night. It should be a relatively easy win for the Lady Vols. I mean, my goodness, they beat this team, I don't know, 82-28?
84-28, yeah. Yep, back on January 9th. And that was right after Ole Miss had dismissed its leading scorer.
And it was on the road.
Yes, that was in Oxford.
And there was a game, I can't remember the exact score, but they played South Carolina, and South Carolina in the first quarter led, I don't know, 34-2?
Yes.
It was crazy. I'm like, wait a minute. I went back on my DVR. I rewound it to see that score. I thought, that can't be right. Well, it was. And so Ole Miss is terrible, just the way it is. And I don't know when they're going to regroup and get better. I looked at their RPI, and I think it's somewhere in the 280s. So it's a game that Tennessee should win handily. And then you go to Auburn after that. You need to get that win. To me, you cannot lose to a team that you're supposed to beat at this point in the year, if you want to make sure you get an NCAA tournament. That may not be good enough anyway, because you don't know how many upsets might occur in some of the other conferences or some of the mid-major or lower-level conferences. But and then certainly it would behoove Tennessee if they could get a couple of wins in the SEC tournament. If they're able to do that, I don't think there's any doubt they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. Then it's just a matter of what your seeding going to be, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever.
Yeah, The last two teams on your conference schedule, Ole Miss at home tonight, at Auburn on Sunday, have a combined 3 wins between them in SEC play, all 3 belonging to Auburn.
Yeah, and so that, again, underscores why you should win this game and why you should be able to close out the game at Auburn the next week. And to their credit, while the Lady Vols haven't really beaten a team that's currently ranked, they have, for the most part, taken care of business and beating the teams they were supposed to beat. And that didn't always happen the last few years. Now,
correct.
The last few years, we saw Tennessee score some upsets. We haven't seen that this year, but at least they're not falling to teams they should beat. So, and then you do wonder how much better this team be if they had another score like Zay Green. They don't. And they've still been plagued by the turnover bug, which is cropped up way too often for this team.
Yeah, you can go back to a couple of instances, just like you can with the Volunteers, you can with the Lady Vols. As hard as they played in the second half against Texas A&M, anytime they had an opportunity to perhaps get within 3-2 or even be in position to take a lead with a 3, they just, for whatever reason, had great difficulty just completing the pass that would set up a scoring opportunity. For Tennessee, when Auburn was going on that run this past Saturday, there were times they just didn't get a shot up. And I couldn't remember in that key stretch in the fourth quarter, that the Lady Vols were able to even get a shot away because of either unforced turnovers or forced turnovers. And that's just something that, that will haunt you. And I do think that I give Kelly Harper and the new staff credit for how hard that they've gotten this team to play. Even some games that really got out of hand early, like the trip to Columbia. Appreciate the fight that they showed for the whole 40 minutes. But I just think that I'm excited to see what this team does next year, because I think there's a lot of youth and I think there's some good talent, and I think it's going to pay off.
They don't lose anybody that's averaged more than 5 points in a game. And I don't know if her name is Destiny, something from Arkansas. We'll see what she adds to the table. I think Horston will be a better player when she limits some of her turnovers. And I also think when you get Green back, you got a chance to have a pretty good basketball team with that group. Some of the turnovers you talked about, from a coaching perspective, most coaches are okay with your aggressive turnovers. But sometimes when you just make unforced errors and you just throw it out of bounds and there's nobody there, or you make a silly pass into traffic, that's when coaches get upset, and that's what Tennessee has done too often. At some point, they've got to cut that out, and they did a better job in their most recent game.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We turn our attention to hockey next, as it'll be Mike Murray, president and GM of the Ice Bears. He joins us for Slap Shots next on 99.1 The Sports Animal. It's Thursday. That means it's time to turn our attention to the Frozen Pond, and that would be at the Civic Coliseum, the home of the Ice Bears. Tomorrow night, college night. And we're now joined by the president and GM of the Ice Bears as it's Slap Shots with Mike Murray. Mike, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Well, certainly appreciate your time, as always. And another productive weekend for the Ice Bears. Got 3 out of 4 points, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the point we missed was overtime. In the weekend before, the whole building erupted when we won in overtime. It was a little bit of a heartbreaker. But, again, the capacity crowd, they saw a great hockey game, great entertainment. And, the guys are playing really well right now. So, like I said, despite, after that game, we had another call up. And, that's always, again, frustrating. But I'll be really happy. Myself, Jeff, and Spencer Metcalf will be very happy after Saturday at midnight when some of these, it's bittersweet. You want to see them do well when they go up there. But anybody that goes up after Saturday cannot come back to the Ice Bears. So that's it has to be a really for sure thing that they're going to stick it out through the playoffs at the next level to make that decision. So it's good for our league just to be able to have, have all of us, all the teams really know what they have going down the stretch into the playoffs. So not putting that rule into place kind of makes you, have to juggle your lineup all the way down the stretch, and we just don't want to do that.
What are the chances that some of the guys that have been called up this year do get a chance to return?
Well, I think there's a pretty good chance. Some of those teams won't make the playoffs, and so those guys will get sent right back. And again, it's the trickle-down effect. If the NHL team isn't going to make the playoffs, then some of those guys on two-way contracts will get bumped down to the American League, which those guys will bump down to the East Coast League. And that's when, our guys might not play as much or might not play at all. And that's when, obviously, we want to make sure we get them back for our stretch run.
Mike, I got to ask you about David Ayers, the 42-year-old goalie, the Zamboni driver. Carolina has a couple of goalies who get hurt. He comes in the oldest to get his first win. And he had 8 saves in Carolina's victory. Just talk about what a great story that is for David Ayers.
Well, it's a great story for sports in general, but obviously a great story for our sport. But I don't know if anybody, I'm sure it's come to light this year. But so in the NHL, they've instituted that there's always one backup goalie in the crowd, and he can play for either team if both goalies go down. So obviously, him being a Zamboni driver for the minor league team, the Marlies, he was the designated guy. So to see that happen, it's only happened one other time that I know of, a couple of years ago with the Blackhawks. But what a great story for him, his family, and you know, get to live out a childhood dream. I don't know if you heard all the other side of the story, but obviously he was on the Today Show a couple days later, and you know, his dreams of playing pro hockey were kind of, you know, he had to have a kidney transplant a number of years ago, and his mom gave it to him. And so, but he was, you know, he's been their practice goalie. And then, you know, there's a quote out there, success is where opportunity meets preparation. And that's exactly what happened there. And obviously his stick is going into the Hockey Hall of Fame right away. And the Canes took the puck with them. And I think one other thing, he was asked if they could, you know, create a T-shirt or something with his likeness. And in true, you know, hockey player form, he said, I'd love to have all the proceeds go to the Kidney Foundation of Carolina. Yeah. And, you know, just first-class guy, just beaming, smiling the whole time. You know, like I said, a great story for our sport, but just a great sports story all together. Just to see that come together was amazing.
He had a bit of a shaky start because he gave up two quick goals, but then he ended up with eight saves. So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, someone should have told him to take a drink and drown his butterflies for those first two. But
nice.
I could only imagine you step out there. You know, you're getting the wave down from the stands, eating your popcorn, and you're going in, throw a name bar on his back, and he steps out there in front of 20,000 people that are cheering for his favorite team, who he was cheering for, but now he's stopping pucks against them. So again, it was a super, just a super story all the way around.
Another big moment in hockey, Alex Ovechkin, 700 goals. He's now got more than that. The second fastest to Wayne Gretzky, who had 894 goals. What I read was Gretzky did not score more than 40 goals in a season after turning 30, but Ovechkin is 34 and he's still going strong. Do you think he's got a chance to catch Gretzky?
You know, it's all about staying healthy, I think. You know, he's done that for the most of his career, but again, he shoots from everywhere. He's got great line mates. I mean, if he really wants to put the pedal down for it, I mean, there is a chance. I mean, but I mean, it really just depends how his body holds up. You know, the game is so different now, and not taking anything away from Gretzky, he was absolutely amazing. But the game is different now, and you know, it'd be tough to get to for sure. But like I said, it would all be about him staying healthy for sure.
You of course, the team in a position right now where it's in third place. And it's amazing how quickly we get to this stretch drive, but you've got the home ice tomorrow night. Then you hit the road for what will be another big-time matchup. It's tomorrow night at home against Macon, then at Huntsville. Tell us about the two matchups this weekend.
Well, obviously, you know, Macon's gotten a little bit better. You know, we're going to have a great crowd tomorrow night. It'll be this is a weird couple weeks for us because we don't play at all next weekend because those two games got shifted around, hence part of the reason that guys have games in hand on us. Expect the full house tomorrow night. Obviously it's college night. My staff tells me that we're playing dodgeball with fraternities at center ice after the first period. So that should be interesting. obviously heading into Huntsville, they always have a great crowd. They're number one in the league in attendance. All their building upgrades have really done them well, but they average almost a little over 5,500 people a game. So close to six even. So, it'll be, you know, we need to have these games. We talked about these games in hand that the other teams have on us, and most of them will catch us next weekend when we're not playing. So we'll really see where we sit there as a result. But, you know, it's always a battle in Huntsville, but, like I said, we can only take care of what we can take care of at this point. Stay healthy. Jeff's got the guys playing really well right now, and, you know, take care of our business at home and hopefully get two more points on the road and just sit back and see what happens that following week.
Yeah, you talked about how, one, Coach Carr was, you know, good enough, wasn't going to be good enough. And what do you think has been the biggest difference you've seen as the Ice Bears have certainly played themselves out of that rough patch, which they kind of got stuck in for a couple of weeks?
I think, you know, just sticking to the system that Jeff put in place. I mean, he has a different approach. He and Spencer Metcalf have a different approach for every team that we play. Obviously, there's lots of video that goes into things just like any other sport. But noticing the other team's tendencies and just, like I said, the comfort level of the room changed a lot when we made those trades. And like I said, if you want a job in hockey and you want to play for that logo, the Knoxville logo, it's you know, you kind of step up and you could be the next guy out. And like I said, down the stretch, it's going to be, you know, we've got 19 positions that we will put on the playoff roster. And, you know, guys can easily play themselves at a position. But I think the turnaround is really just been that. It was a wake-up call for the room. You know, all of a sudden there's two guys that were in the room all year and now they're not. And that was a wake-up call for some guys. And, you know, we're just finishing the body on everybody right now. And like I said, I didn't like it. I saw us get pushed around in our own building, and that's when the changes needed to happen. And it's, you know, just something that's unacceptable in our building. And it had to happen. So I think going down the stretch, hopefully we can get a couple more guys back from the call-ups after this weekend and, you know, kind of get dialed in and see where we sit. Hopefully we're in the top four so we can have a home ice advantage in the playoffs.
Mike, we just recently saw the anniversary, the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice, and I know I'd asked you a little bit about that last week, but I watched it, some of it over the weekend, and I got chills again as I saw this. But I wanted to ask you, did Canadians dislike the Russians as much as the U.S. players?
Absolutely. if you look back on the 72 Canada Cup, I think it was, and this is back, you know, I'm going way back right now, but and the documentaries of Bobby Clark and Phil Esposito, and they got called to play for that team. And this is back in the day when you went to training camp to get in shape. And these guys kind of took it for granted, and then Russians came in and just walked all over them. And, you know, there's a famous slash that Bobby Clark with the Philadelphia Flyers took on one of the Russians' ankles over there. And it was brutal. But, you know, they embarrassed the Canadians at that time. And then it was like a wake-up call. And ever since then, there was always that rivalry as well. So, you know, I think as a Canadian kid, like I said, I think it was 13 at the time that the U.S. won. And, you know, so we were rooting for them too. But, again, whether it was Canada or U.S., it was great for hockey.
Were the Russians disliked by pretty much everybody at that time?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, just because, you know, they were just so dialed in. Their training was different than what we had seen, and just, you know, their discipline was off the charts, and just, you know, their stoic nature with their coaching and whatever it was, you just wanted to not like them.
Our guest, Mike Murray, president and GM of the Ice Bears, as he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. And as you mentioned, it's a big night with College Night, and tickets still available?
Yeah, absolutely. Just obviously, you can go to our website, KnoxvilleIceBears.com, or Ticketmaster. Like I said, I can't thank the Knoxville community enough. Seeing, you know, when the puck drops, we look and then like, geez, there are only 3,000 people in here. And then, you know, within 10 minutes, the building's full. And like I said, I think compliments to our staff, our production team, and everything. We've gotten so much better every single game with our production of that video board and the entertainment aspect of what we bring aside from the game itself. You know, we're getting ready to roll out our renewals for our season ticket holders and you know, a lot of our corporate partners. And from everything I've seen so far, we're going to continue to grow here in this community, and can't thank Knoxville enough for that.
Well, I congratulate Coach Carr and the Ice Bears, because they survived a night where our own bad take Andy Sellers dropped the puck. And for them to get a point out of that game, I think they that's like whistling past the graveyard.
That's awesome. No, we truly love the partnership, obviously, with you guys and all of our partners that help make us go. Like I said, being one of only two professional hockey teams in the entire state, I'm pretty proud of what our community brings to us and what our staff and our players do for the community as well. So it's a win-win all the way around.
Okay, so spring training and baseball's fired up. You tell me, from your vantage point, what's the more superstitious sport, baseball or hockey?
Oh, well, I'm not sure about, I don't know about baseball so much, obviously, with the hats inside out and turned around and all the things, but there's some crazy superstitions in hockey. I mean, I think of all the people I come across. I think our very own Jeff Carr is probably the most superstitious guy I've ever seen. You know, drives a certain way to the rink, walks a certain way around you after a meeting.
Really?
You know, does all the crazy things. But I don't know. I mean, there was a time, I think, when the Canadian men and women went on to win gold at one time, that there was a guy, and if anybody knows Canadian currency, he put a loonie, which is a dollar in Canada, under the ice before they froze it, right at center ice, and both the women and Canadian women and men won that year. And when they took the ice out, they took the loonie and gave it to Wayne Gretzky. He was the I think he was the executive director of that team at the time. And I think back in the 80s, obviously, when I played, I think the New York Islanders started the playoff beard. You know, just you don't shave, mm-hmm. you get dialed into that. And just the fact that, you know, when someone wins the Prince of Wales trophy, you know, a lot of teams are superstitious. They won't even touch it because that's not the trophy. It's the loneliest trophy, they say. Because no one wants to touch that one. They just want to wait and touch the one that matters the most, which is the Stanley Cup. So there's a bunch of them. I'm not as familiar with the baseball superstitions. You could probably enlighten me, I'm sure. But, gosh, hockey, there's been so many of them. And, you know, I used to always get dressed from left to right. It was left skate first, right skate next. It was and there was a time here in Knoxville, I'll be real quick, I stopped at the Weigel's on the Hill Avenue there to get a coffee before a game, and you know how they have those little red chocolates there by the register, and I took one. So obviously paid for it, but
right.
That might have been a superstition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been quite a superstition, yeah. But I got the winning goal that night. So the next time I stopped, got the coffee, got two cherries, got two goals that night. Stopped another game, coffee, three cherries, three goals. It was just insane. I was either going to get fat or lead the league in scoring.
That's incredible.
They're crazy.
Yeah, and then one of my all-time favorites is just the how we got to the octopus on the ice deal with Detroit, where you need 8 wins to win the Stanley Cup, octopus, throwing that bad boy on the ice. There you go.
That was a good one. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, but I think you'll find that there are practices in all sports that you got to respect the streak. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. We could actually have a whole show about superstition for different sports. I'd be interested to see what some of the other ones are. But you know, I've played with a lot of guys over the years that, you know, like Wayne Gretzky back in the day when he taped his stick, he put baby powder on it, and it was just like, you know, unbelievable. Then, you know, young guys are trying to do that. Why we never really knew, but we tried it anyway. But just crazy stuff that guys would do. I'd seen guys put their kids' initials on the back of the stick after they tape it, and just you know, all kinds of different things. But there's a bunch of them out there for sure.
That's a show we're gonna do. So just make sure we'll tell you when the show is, and you can join us, and that'll be a whole lot of fun. But hey, good luck with college night tomorrow night as the Ice Bears skate on the home ice. Have a great and successful trip to Huntsville. We always appreciate it. Keep it going.
Guys, thanks so much. Have a great weekend as well.
All right. To you as well. Shout out to the folks in Sarnia. Hope they're doing well. And that is President and GM Mike Murray of the Ice Bears as he joins us for Slap Shots every Thursday afternoon. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Download the TuneIn app so you can take 99.1 The Sports Animal with you wherever you go.
We come back for a relatively short segment to close out hour number two of Sports Talk with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Boy, some great superstitions there.
Yes, interesting, and it would be intriguing to see. I know a number of the baseball ones. Certainly they're in basketball and football as well. So it'd be kind of cool to get some people on that have their superstitions, perhaps even athletes that did that and go through their list.
Oh, no doubt. The athletes is where I would want to start, and then go into the fan athlete, to go into the fan practices that I just to know everything that went into exactly how Nomar Garciaparra had to start with one specific foot on one specific step of the Fenway dugout to make his way to home plate before he would hit. You just know that there is a whole sack of crazy that's out there across the board. And then also the other ones, because I've been in that similar practice myself, and I no longer consider myself superstitious, but I do have habits. Because it's silly to be superstitious, but I do have game day habits. It'd be great to hear what fans, what is the luckiest hat and or item. That's going to be something that'll be fun to put together.
My worst one probably was, as growing up a Pete Maravich fan, I used to do this, that silly floppy socks thing, and my mother used to not really appreciate that. I got to wear those. I scored a few points in that last game. I got to wear, now those things, don't wash them.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why nobody would guard me.
That's right. We're hanging these bad boys outside. Yeah. That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. Up next, Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com joins us for hour number 3 of Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.